The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
An embarrassment of crises. Which issue will dominate the political landscape after the summer recess? Poll of polls. Who will be in government after the next election? Accession. Who's waiting in the wings and when will their patience run out? And how will a redrawn constituency map impact the shape of the next Dáil? We'll have all the answers to all the big political questions on tonight's Late Debate. And joining us in studio to debate all of that, we have Gerard Howland, public affairs consultant and former political advisor, Teresa Reedy, political scientist in the Department of Government at UCC, Kevin Cunningham, lecturer in politics in TU Dublin and founder of the Ireland Thinks polling company, and Kate O'Connell, pharmacist and former Fine Gael TD. We want to hear from you as well, so get in touch. Text us on 51551, email us at latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate. RTE. Now, Fianna Fáil members will hold a special party meeting tomorrow morning where TDs will demand an extraordinary budget package, including an increase in welfare payments by up to €20, help with back-to-school costs and the widening of tax bans, amongst many others. That's according to the Irish Times in the last hour. Earlier, it was reported that the government is considering bringing forward the budget to September. Because, of course, the cost of living crisis is the headline issue as we approach the last days of this Dáil term. And we decided to invite in our esteemed panel of political experts and cephalologists to cast a cold eye over recent developments and look ahead to what events, dear boy, are likely to clutter up the political horizon in the time ahead. The political temperature is already on the rise.
Yeah, could I just say, I think the comments from the opposition in relation to this are deeply disingenuous. I mean, Sinn Féin is the wealthiest party in Ireland. To the greatest respect to the deputy opposite, some Nick, to start lecturing other parties in terms of fundraising.
I can't believe what I've just witnessed. The minister is saying he's no comment. Can you not be your own person, your own party? Like, are we supposed to treat this parliament this way? You're not even going to give a response to very serious accusations.
Deputy, just first of all, I think that was a cheap shot. I hosted a dinner last night to thank colleagues for their years of service, and there was no public money involved. You host dinners in America, you charge people $1,000 a plate to attend, and your party leader flies first class to get there. That's what you do in the middle of a cost of living crisis.
So first things first, Taoiseach, I'm not asking you to chase inflation. I am asking you to recognise the reality that people are struggling now. You say that we need to protect our economy, and we do, but Taoiseach, above all else, we need to protect our people.
Statements on this, statements on that, debate on that, debate on that, but the hell with the legislation.
Hell with the legislation. Well, we're going to have debates on this and debates on that now. First of all, let's have a look at where the parties stand as we come into this summer recess. Kevin Cunningham, if we were to go to the polls tomorrow, what would it look like?
Well, if you look at the state of the parties, if you take the average poll of all polls, because some polls are, you know, bigger than others for different parties, but Sinn Féin would be on 36.5%, Fine Gael 19.5%, and Fianna Fáil 18%. And what's interesting about that is that's across all the polls, you know, not just the ones that are, you know, have loads of Sinn Féin bots in them or whatever. But, you know, the Sinn Féin figure is closing in on Fianna Fáil plus Fine Gael. And it's quite staggering. And even just to put into context, so Sinn Féin's total there, 36.5%, is larger than what Fine Gael would have got in the 2016 general election when they 2011 general
which
election,
was the winner, which was sweeping the board.
Yeah, when they got into power. So you're getting to a situation where Sinn Féin, you know, if there was an election, which is a massive if, and we can talk about that as well. But if there was an election, you know, they're closing in on not an overall majority, but a situation where they don't necessarily need to rely on Fianna Fáil, that they might look outside towards independence, towards other left-wing parties. And it's now sort of closing in on the idea that there's some sort of viable Sinn Féin-led left coalition that wasn't necessarily viable last time.
Okay, but I'm already getting a question. Is there other parties with bots that are skewing the poll results in their favour as well?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, polls are, you know, they're pollsters know how to manage this sort of stuff. So it's you know, the idea that bots could actually influence polls in this way is total nonsense. But I think the interesting thing, and one of the things I remain quite cautious about this is, you know, we're quite a long way from a general election, and increasingly in general elections these days, not just in Ireland, but many other European countries, you know, when you get to the election itself, it's only that at that point in time that people are deciding who they're going to vote for. And, you know, there's all sorts of different narratives that could emerge, a kind of a Fine Gael versus Sinn Féin narrative. It could happen, but, you know, it's hard to tell really what will definitely happen at the next general election, because these sorts of things start to swing around quite a lot these days.
Yeah, and I'm looking just at the most recent Red Sea one, because that's the one that has the most tracking, most ability to track. And this is one with the last five different poll returns here, starting at the general election, where Sinn Féin were at 25%. When you look at it represented in a bar chart, it's really striking, isn't it, Teresa? Like the relentless rise, really, of Sinn Féin, and the stuttering or decline of the other two parties.
Absolutely. I have a longer thread going all the way back to 2016 and sitting in front of me also from the Red Sea poll. And it's quite striking, the sharp increase in support for Sinn Féin in 2019. And what's interesting is you have a bit of variability around support for Fine Gael. Remember, we talked a lot about a rally around the flag effect in early COVID period. Fine Gael gained a lot of support in the opinion polls, but that has all eroded away back for Fine Gael, and it's back where it was in 2020, and Fianna Fáil is a little bit behind where it was maybe at the general election, but that Sinn Féin vote has continued its upward trajectory. Now it's levelled off at about in the early 30s, so it could be that there's a limit to that, and in fact we'd really expect that there is a limit to where it can go, but it is a very long way out from a general election in the kind of normal run of events. And there are dangers for the Sinn Féin vote, not least of which is complacency, that it's very far ahead very early on, but it will have other challenges. Perhaps more to do actually with what would happen if it got into government, which must be front and centre in the minds of many of the senior Sinn Féin leadership at this stage, because the party has promised a great deal. And governing in the Republic is different to governing in other places. You are responsible as the government, and all of the parties that have governed recently know that there is a grave penalty for governing. So the party must tread a very delicate balance if it is going into government, because there are grave dangers in the next 2 months or 2 years, sorry.
But I mean, when you look at what's the headline I read out for you there from the Irish Times this evening, what the Fianna Fáil backbenchers and indeed frontbenchers are going to be demanding in the budget, they're all going to be plague on everyone's house, because everybody will have promised the devil and all the way things are going.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you look to the widening of the tax bands, that's playing to that middle voter, the squeezed middle that's constantly been referred to. And I think that's where it has to be at for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. It depends really on who wins the battle. Or maybe there's the coalition that they will coalesce permanently with a vision. But I think Sinn Féin have positioned themselves as the credible and viable opposition in the absence of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael fighting, because over the number of years, because of circumstances, and even though it is mature government, it was needed for the country in terms of confidence in the supply and then the coalition, that now Sinn Féin have had time to build up, have positioned themselves, and it seems to be a bit of a runaway train. So it really now is, because of the 2 year gap, who can actually credibly answer to that centre ground. And there is time, I think, for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil to win it back. There definitely is time. And if ever there were a time post-COVID, a sort of a renaissance period, the resetting of everything after a war and after a pandemic, the opportunity possibly is there. Is the money there? I don't know. And are people willing to stick with what would be deemed as the same crowd for another decade?
But in the difficulty, though, is that it's quite likely that it won't be after a war or after a pandemic or indeed after a cost of living crisis. We could still be in the throes of all of these crises, even in 1-2 years' time.
I think only an optimist would think that we're going to be in some happy ever after by the second half of 2024.
And nobody's ever accused you of being an optimist.
Well, I'm very optimistic, actually, just not about things like this. I'm a very happy, optimistic person. But there's no happy ever after in terms of the economy or the world in that time frame that can be foreseen. And I would just like to say something else about parties up and down and all the rest. A lot of this comes from the nature of the coalition that was formed in 2020, why it was formed, and leaving Sinn Féin in opposition, Fine Gael, and the instant of getting that bad result on the day, its immediate instinct was to go into opposition. Micheál Martin certainly seemed to have a brief train of thought mid-afternoon on that day that perhaps there were wider options available. That was all rapidly closed down.
That they could have gone into government with Sinn Féin.
And leaving Sinn Féin in opposition.
But do we ever get underneath the bonnet of exactly what happened that day? Because I do recall the reporting of that as that day wound down.
Mm.
And being very struck by what was said by Micheál Martin that afternoon. And then how it disappeared and could not be mentioned again.
I don't know what happened under the bonnet. I suspect there were very few people with him under the bonnet. But whatever happened between them, that was it, and it was over. And I think he was very focused on his own leadership in those hours and days. And what happened from there began from that premise. And leaving Sinn Féin in opposition was such an extraordinary gift. And it was done for reasons of stupidity and selfishness on an industrial scale. It was a decision.
Well, now, come on, we've just been hearing it was the mature choice here from Kate.
No, it wasn't a mature.
The country needed a stable government. They were being, the media was hammering them day in, day out that we need a stable government. Will somebody step in and form a government?
If you are serious about, politics and about, a real centre force in Irish politics, to leave them out, to sweep up this advantage as they have ever since, was entirely foreseeable. The scale of what came wasn't foreseeable. But the fact, the underlying fact of it was, and it's happened, and it's working. By the way, the arrangement in place is working splendidly, after a fashion, for those who hold office in the government. We shouldn't forget that.
I have a listener here, Brendan, a Kerry man, saying, I recall a summer general election in 1977 during an energy crisis when the incoming majority had a giveaway populist style. History yet to come. That's, of course, Jack Lynch's Fianna Fáil incoming government that time, who's again, a massive landslide election. And that was bore very bad news for Fianna Fáil ultimately, didn't it? And I have another one here. Let's see what a real election brings instead of all this projection. Exactly who is polled? What demography? Has someone who has paid tax for the last 60 years and more? Yes, I'm almost 80, worked all my life. It's galling to hear Sinn Féin and cohorts promising heaven and all. From where? Who is going to underwrite this giveaway? The sound of Piers Doherty and Paul Murphy constantly on the airwaves sends a shiver down my spine, says Ina. Can I ask you, Kevin? Teresa said there she thinks that there is probably a ceiling to Sinn Féin's rise.
Yeah.
Do you think they could hit the 40s and above?
I definitely would have agreed with Teresa. In fact, I thought for a while that their ceiling was around the mid-30s. But, I mean, the last number of polls are starting to hit...
36,
The last couple of polls are now into the high 30s. And I think that a lot of that is happening in the context of this cost of living crisis, which we'll probably talk about later on. But that's just one of those issues that, because it affects so many different demographics, because it's right across the board, that it actually, I think it can influence politics in a very different way, in which other issues sometimes do. And like the other issues, like the Ukrainian crisis, very, very important, but it's not necessarily going to influence how people respond, I think, to the political system, because it's not directly affecting them in the same way. And, the salience of that issue rose very significantly and now has disappeared when we look at those trackers. But cost of living as an issue is so big that it's the sort of thing I think that's really affecting this sort of calculation.
What about leaders, Teresa?
Before we go on, yeah. I think the other question, though, that's really important here is whether this is an enduring change in Irish politics, whether that support level for Sinn Féin marks a reorientation of support on a kind of medium term, at least. And we don't know the answer. We don't know the answer to that. It could be a function of the political arithmetic at the moment.
And you could have
mean reversion should I think, politics go back
and
to...
And there's always the danger of the point you were making. Is that we had the fallout as we had after Labour went into government in 2011 with, you know, the Every Little Hurts campaign, and we saw where, you know, they're still paying the price for that politically.
We've had very volatile elections, the last three elections. I mean, 2011 was the peak, but the last two elections were also quite volatile, and there was quite a bit of swapping from one election to the next election. So we could see more of that at a next election, but that doesn't necessarily mean that would be the enduring trend for a decade or two decades after. We could be in very choppy waters for a considerable period of time.
Now, look at the leaders. I want to have a quick run through. Micheál Martin, how's he been doing in your view?
Well, I think Micheál Martin has been doing reasonably well as Taoiseach. Certainly, he grew into the role. I'm here from Cork this evening. I can tell you he has indeed been extremely visible in Cork City and County over the last number of months in a way that he wasn't in the early part of his time as Taoiseach. I think you probably need to separate out his performance of his role as leader of government from his role as leader of his political party. I think you'd probably give him a very good scorecard in terms of leading government through quite difficult times. But I think when it comes to leadership of the political party, he's been there for a very long period of time. But there is no settled position in regards to where Fianna Fáil is going into the future. Who even the next contenders for the leadership are is quite a wide open field.
There's no people, as PJ Mara would say, nibbling at the leader's bum?
I mean, Micheál Martin is due to step down as Taoiseach at the end of the year, and at that point he'll be moving into another ministry, and I think questions about his leadership will inevitably re-emerge in the way that they did shortly after the election. And there are no settled leadership candidates. There's no settled leadership vision for where Fianna Fáil is going, where it's going to position itself into the future, how it's going to react even for the second part of the government in terms of positioning itself going into the election. So I think while he does well as Taoiseach, as leader of the political party...
If you were a betting woman...
I mean, I would. We have no indications to say that he's going to leave. He would probably go in to another ministry. The big speculation, of course, is which ministry that would be, whether it's foreign affairs or perhaps higher education.
I think he'll go.
You don't think he'll hang
on? I think it would be very hard to last 2 years as a minority coalition partner. You see today, Leo Varadkar kind of dominates the space in the same way that Micheál Martin is very popular today, definitely no doubt, and he's been very, very successful as a Taoiseach. And, you know, far more successful than his own party is because, you know, he's almost as popular as Mary Lou McDonald, even though Sinn Féin are, like, way more popular than Fianna Fáil. But I think he's going to struggle for relevance in the same way that even as Taoiseach, he struggles for relevance. And it's going to be even worse when and think, you know, if Fianna Fáil started to decline and that, you know, you could see it happening, I think. Over 2 years, I think it would be very difficult for him.
Okay, what about then the opposite effect? Will leadership become Leo Varadkar again?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's lined up that Leo Varadkar becomes Taoiseach in December. Obviously, I'd imagine within the party, they're anxious that the ongoing file at the DPP's office is finished up with soon in whatever way. So it's lined up, and I think there's obviously that you can see already the moves towards the reshuffle, you know, and the sort of people getting airtime on various issues to the fore. So I hope that it all goes to plan. But like that, I feel
choir boys singing for supper, do you think?
Pardon?
Choir boys singing for
well,
supper,
well, no longer.
Perhaps?
A lot seems to be an awful lot of people retiring out of Fine Gael and not running in the next general election. And perhaps there'll be a new cohort of choir boys or choir girls. But at this point in time, you can see within the party the moves for preferment at the next outing. But like, will that happen? There's an autumn of unrest with the cost of living and with Ukraine and with everything else. And COVID obviously is going to be a problem for the winter and anything that comes with that. At this point, you know, the health service should be able to cope with you know, we're nearly 3 years in. And I don't think there'll be any appetite amongst business people to shut the place down again. The service should be able to cope. So that's going to be a major challenge for coalition, and no matter who the Taoiseach is.
Okay. Ger, what about the third government leader? You're a fan, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, of the three parties in government, like them or loathe them, I know, or think I know, why the Greens are in government and what they want to do. I cannot say that of either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. I think they have a mission. I think they're fairly methodical about implementing it. They know what they want to leave behind. Whether any of them will be left behind after the event is another matter. But I give them credit for having an agenda.
And Ivana Bacic, there hasn't been a bounce.
No. And she is personally, I mean, Kate shares a constituency with her. I have a sense she's somebody who's personally very well liked. But the Labour has a deep problem. And I think the only hope for Labour is to survive at the next election, that Sinn Féin is in government, and the obvious contradictions that underlie its position and its promises unfold, and there is a reopening for other parties on the left subsequently.
Okay. Let's talk about the census and what that is going to mean for the political map, the constituency map. They were talking about at least 11 new more TDs and possibly as many as 17, which would be actually extraordinary. I suppose we won't hold our breath for that one. But even 11 new TDs, extra TDs, that would be quite something. It would lead, it's going to require quite a bit of redrawing, isn't it?
Absolutely. But I think what's extraordinary is the population growth. And it probably hasn't gotten enough attention over the last couple of months. The country is really after seeing a dramatic turnaround in population figures. And we're going to see that reflected in a whole variety of other parts. It's just crystallising in the political system for the first time. I think it's probably also worth saying that we were far too close to the constitutional thresholds on the last occasion. Most of the constituencies were very close to 30,000. So it was inevitable that there was going to have to be a serious look at the constituencies. It's worth saying this is a constitutional requirement. It's written into the constitution. Each TD should represent somewhere between 20,000 and 30,000 TDs. And we actually had a constitutional referendum back in the 1960s where Fianna Fáil actually sought to change that to allow some parts of the country to be overrepresented and other parts underrepresented. And it was rejected resoundingly by the voters. So by and large, voters, well, at least back then, but we can probably infer it to today, believe that actually representation ratios should be reasonably stable and they should be reasonably equal across the country. That being said, though, converting this data into new constituencies is going to be quite complicated, and it's going to be even more difficult, I think, to project because the way we do it is changing. So these processes used to be handled by a boundary commission, which had lots of ex officio members from the Clerk of the Dáil and the Clerk of the Shannon. And it was a depoliticised process. But now it's actually going to be a new, again, also depoliticised process, but a brand new process, because the Electoral Commission, which is currently being established and is only going through the Dáil at the moment, is going to be responsible for doing this.
Who's going to be on the Electoral Commission?
Well, at the moment, the rules are, I think it's going to be chaired. Well, it's according to the legislation as it currently stands, it's going to be chaired by a judge. There's going to be some ex officio members. And then there are going to be 3 to 4 members which are going to be appointed by open recruitment. But it's a good point because
it's going to have a huge amount of power in terms of,
but the commission's not even set up
very
yet.
Sensitive
all these people issues. Have to be appointed, and then they can start on this business of doing the boundary revisions, and they've never done this before through the auspices of the Electoral Commission, so it's going to be very interesting to see how that pans out.
And Kevin, you're such a nerd, you've done up a spreadsheet.
I love it all over.
Of where these new seats might
the guidance is to try to keep it as close as possible to county boundaries. So within that confines, you can actually figure out to some extent what they might do.
Will they start splitting up those 5-seaters back into three-seaters?
So you look what they did in the last changes, it's almost like they're going to reverse a lot of those. That seems like the most likely and obvious thing to do. So if you look at the population changes first, you know, the counties with the biggest increase in their population was like Longford. So Longford had a 14% increase. Dublin was 7.7, which is around the national average. So a lot of the places where the biggest increases are actually kind of one of the lowest, least populated areas. So I worked out a couple of places that seem likely to change. Donegal is currently a 5-seater. It's actually now popular, even though Donegal's population increased by the smallest amount, it's now too big for a five-seater, so it has to be split back again towards Donegal North and Donegal South, which is what it used to be.
Kerry as well, right?
Kerry, I think, is slightly too big as well, but Kerry has that kind of Limerick sort of part of it that you could kind of take a little bit in because there's Limerick City and Limerick County, so they might do some of that. Leash Offaly is the most obvious one, so Leash Offaly is now going to be too big for a single five-seater, so you could easily split that into two threes. Longford West Meath will just straight up increase to a five-seater because there's too many people there. Mayo back to a five-seater, and then there's a weird one in Carlow Kilkenny where Kilkenny is now too big and you kind of have to figure out where that goes, and that'll be some decision. I mean, clearly some of it could go into West Wicklow because there's a closeness there. But broadly speaking, I think one of the interesting things is because the population's increased so much that, you know, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael may lose support in the next election, but it may not actually have any impact on their overall seat numbers because the seat oversize the Dáil is going to increase, and they're only
but it will impact their seat share, obviously, which will be the important
thing. The seat share, yeah. Well, in terms of getting
in, so it might take the bare look off the election result,
because a lot of the
if indeed that is the election result,
and a lot of the calculation from the TD's perspectives, I think, is predominantly like a personal one. You know, are they going to lose their seat?
Why don't we ask the only person who was actually a TD in this room? Does this strike absolute fear into the heart of every TD when they hear boundary redrawing?
Yeah, I mean, if there's, I suppose, a history of if it's been changed before and there's work been done, it's, you know, people have worked the ground, they've provided in the area. And
I was always amused by people mourning, for many years, as if a family member had departed. Their vote, they took my vote. My vote was taken from me, as if it was a very, very, very personal.
And and people will be eyeing up, you know, if there was a particularly strong Fine Gael area, you know, there's areas of North Inner City in Dublin which moved and really significantly impacted on
Noel Rock is
classic example there. And I think Pascal Dunne who gained. So there are those changes that can have significant impact at just ask Noel Rock. But you know, there's Dublin Bay South, if it changed there with Temple Oak, if Temple Oak came into Dublin Bay South and Talla became from the Talla roundabout out, that would have a significant impact. So, yeah, people would be afraid, and I'm sure it's very important that it is independent, the Electoral Commission.
Especially in Dublin.
Absolutely. And that there's no...
Yeah, it's quite vicious, actually. I mean, you're talking about street by street combat, really,
isn't it? It significantly impact. Like, because it's so area-based and box-based, you really could take out your best area could be gone in one sweep of a geographical line. So, yeah, everyone would be watching it very closely.
Absolutely. Ger, just that thing, that area by area and street by street, I'm thinking the other big issue coming up with the next election is going to be a vote management. Mm. And I was so struck being up in Belfast for the assembly elections just gone there. The vote management by Sinn Féin was absolutely staggering. Like the way in which
West Belfast.
In West Belfast, the out of five, and almost by the quarter, almost by single digits.
They can measure votes with a teaspoon. It's quite incredible. Vote management is going to be very easy for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. There'll be very few constituencies, they'll be running more than one candidate. Their challenge, by the way, will not be vote management between candidates, but gender balance of their tickets. Mm. In relation to Sinn Féin, it, of course, will have a massive vote management challenge. But it is an extremely disciplined organisation. It is not in that second or third generation phase of a political party here where the barons are overmighty subjects. You're a Sinn Féin candidate and you're very much a subject. And that culture, I think, will serve them well electorally. The issue, of course, will be about the quality of candidates. I think a lot of Sinn Féin candidates, and indeed Sinn Féin, are quite surprised by some of the TDs they ended up with. So they're going to have to watch that because, you know, you can't keep everyone in the background forever.
You shook your head there, Teresa.
Yeah, I just...
Do we have some disagreements?
I think, though, we can overstate, you know, Sinn Féin's electoral prowess. I don't think we can take what Sinn Féin is able to achieve in Northern Ireland and transpose it seamlessly into the Republic. It doesn't have that kind of operation here. And
well, we saw what happened in Donegal before, actually, where Pádraig McLoughlin fell foul
of their own electoral management. But they also, just very specifically at the 2020 election, they ran far too few candidates. If they had run more candidates, they would now have many more TDs. So they read the electoral rules well, but they're not infallible. You know, they're the same as the other political parties. They're facing a much more volatile electorate in the Republic, and they have to deal with the same electoral volatility as the other political parties. But I do think they will, I agree with you very much so, Gerard, they will have a lot of difficulties in relation to candidate selection because they have some candidates whom they might decide they don't want to run again. And removing people who are either long-standing candidates or TDs is a very difficult thing to do and causes all kinds of local problems, as all of the other political parties in the system have found. And increasingly, Sinn Féin is having to deal with exactly these types of tensions, the internal problems within the political party. And certainly they have a little bit more control and authority than the other parties, but it's not absolute. And it's breaking down as Sinn Féin is becoming a much more normalised political party. It's also having to deal with the same problems as the other political parties.
I mean, it's a huge benefit for their part, for their support to be brand-based. I think like Fianna Fáil's support is very much about the individual candidate. Mm. Because it's for them, it's a brand. I think it gives them a little bit more leverage to say, this area, you vote for this person, who's our person. You know, kind of in terms of telling their voters how to vote, basically. I think it's a little bit easier for them than the other parties.
But if you're trying to manage candidates who are well-established in one of the so-called establishment parties, all I can say is God help you.
Yes.
You know, it's only for the very brave to get between those warring beasts.
Irish parties are...
The Sinn Féin candidate is generally more biddable by their own machine.
Well, so you say, Ger. Just a couple of texts. We're getting a lot of texts in, a lot of people, things to say about the way things are going. Katie, the way the present elected TDs and senators carry on, and we are to have more of them in the future, God help us all, let the games begin. The wealthy need to be relieved of much of their wealth, says another listener. Otherwise, we shall see revolution soon on the streets and not just in Ireland. The country would be in a far better shape today if Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin had formed a government after the last election rather than this current formation. That's from Dahi. And here's one just in relation to, and I think this is the point you were making, Teresa, the implications of that increase in population. No talk of how many GPs or hospitals or schools or public services are required as a result of Census 2022. All talk is on the extra TDs required. So many potential politicians looking to jump on the Leinster House gravy train. Well, I think the point is, this is the first thing that has come up in relation to it, but as you say, huge implications of that. What is Duverger's law, is it?
Oh, yeah. Duverger's law is, I mean, Teresa will know this well, it's kind of almost political science. One of the first things you're doing when you're doing those things is the idea that in a constituency, if you've only one MP, you're more likely to have two major parties. And the more representatives you have in the constituency, the more parties you're likely to get. So in the Netherlands, the most extreme example, they basically have one constituency of 150 people are elected at one constituency. As a result, they have 16 political parties. So just this is in relation to the idea of if we increase the number of candidates that are elected per constituency to even six or whatever has been discussed, you're likely to get more political parties, basically. So it gives a lot more room to political parties. And one of the interesting things in some other countries, like in Portugal, where, and it's also the case in Ireland to some extent, where you have regional areas with fewer people getting elected, like 3-seat constituencies and 4-seat constituencies in the more regional areas, and then 5 seats in the urban areas. It's more extreme in some of these other countries. It actually gives an advantage to the kind of more right-wing political parties because it kind of shuts out the left from the rural areas, but allows the right to kind of get support in the urban area. So it's a kind of a funny advantage that our current system has as well.
Okay, just one on this, on the gender issue. Listening to Gerard Howland on vote management at the next general election and calling out the Fine Gael issue of gender balance, I'm fully supportive of more women in politics, but will never vote for a candidate only because of gender. Too many TDs and councillors are already assuming gender is enough. Kate?
Yeah, it's 40%, isn't it? Next election, the candidates have
almost
to be.
Almost certainly, yeah.
There was a lot of women lost their seats across the board. A lot of prominent women from Labour lost their seats, and Fianna Fáil lost their seats, and Fine Gael indeed. So I mean, they're rebuilding from a base. It's a pity there's such attrition of women in politics, because trying to get that 40% candidacy number is going to be very, very challenging for parties. Now, there has been work done on the ground across the board, but, you know, whoever decided the way that the gender quota had to be implemented knew what they were at, because that significant financial penalty, my view would be that if it was possible to pay your way out of this one, it would be done. But because it's not a sliding scale, and it's you have to get to the 40%, parties just have to suck it up and do it. And they can't just be going back every election and reinventing the wheel and gathering up as many women as they can around the country. And also, I think politics has become more challenging. So it may not be as easy to gather up token women, as it were, in the past, because despite, obviously, it's a very good job to have and a great honour to be a politician, with social media, both men and women suffer a lot at the hands of the public. So I think it's not as attractive for even for someone just to fill up a ticket and for a party. It's not as attractive an option anymore, I would think. It's really only for people who are serious about a career in politics.
I mean, just to pick up on the exact point that's being made by the person texting it, the whole point of the quotas is to actually give you a choice. Mm-hmm. Because the problem was, before, you had no choice. Yeah. It was this man or that other man or those men over there. There was no choice whatsoever on the ballot paper. The point of the quotas is that you actually get to choose among the different political...
Lord, let me give you the opportunity to vote for a mediocre
parties.
Woman.
Well, I mean, in County Limerick, where I come from, for example, for very many long years, there were no women at all whatsoever on the ballot paper at election after election. After election.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take...
General Sullivan accepted?
No, she's in the city.
Yes.
Okay, we'll take a break there, but we will be talking about political ideology and political packaging after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And just before we get to our next round, I'm reminded by a listener, Katie, you haven't mentioned the independents. They could be the key to the next government formation, and they are not pro Sinn Féin. Are they not, in the main?
No. Yeah, the independents are an interesting group. When you look at least people who support independent candidates, and a lot of the very strong independent candidates, they are the types of people and types of supporters that, I mean, I hate to be quite general about this, but that in many other jurisdictions would often support for populist right-wing parties. There's a kind of quite a similar kind of overlap there. So, I mean, there is an overlap in Sinn Féin and some part of Sinn Féin for that. And then, but for most of Sinn Féin, I think the majority of Sinn Féin's voters and certainly their TDs would be kind of left-wing.
But to be fair, though, we have quite a variety of independents coming from a variety of political places,
yeah,
if I
yeah.
can put it. I mean, any sense of how, I mean, I know in the polls, I think the polls are particularly unreliable, really, aren't they, when it comes to judging whether independents...
Local factors are just so important when it comes to independents, but there is a distribution of them across the country. I think it's probably safe to say some of the rural independents would probably be on a different side of the political spectrum. But there are people like Thomas Pringle, Claire Connolly, who would share ideological Catherine Connolly, and some of the people who were previously with the various iterations of the Socialist Party and People Before Profit, who would share common ground. But there is a question, though, as well, Katie, though, when it comes to the next election, if Sinn Féin is still polling as well as it is, it's not just going to take seats from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. It's probably going to take quite a few seats from other parties on the left. So if we look at how the transfers worked out the last time around, it was large transfers from Sinn Féin candidates, because there was only the one Sinn Féin candidate that brought a lot of other candidates on the far left.
They won't be available this
time.
They
won't be available. Yeah. So particularly People Before Profit, the Socialist Party, some of those TDs are going to be quite vulnerable in the event of this kind of Sinn Féin juggernaut moving forward towards the election.
Right. Okay, getting back to that political ideology and political packaging. Gerard, is Pascal Donoghue the last centrist left standing?
Well, he's certainly centrist. The problem is there's no centre-right left. I thought Fine Gael used to do that. Politics now is from the centre-left. You know, the Progressive Democrats in their heyday was a countervailing force to that, which was influential in various ways at various times.
Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil would have always said Sinn Féin would wreck the economy. I cannot distinguish their spending plans. There's only different, you know, tidal waves of largesse competing with each other from those three big parties, Sinn Féin.
Well, now, Pat McDonough, to give me his due, and I know there was even reports of this, that Fine Gael backbenchers are more concerned now when they hear Pascal Dunne coming on the radio because he's just not speaking the language they want to hear.
He's not spending enough for them. The government is not spending enough for Fianna Fáil backbenchers. Apparently we're going to have that articulated tomorrow at their meeting. But the bottom line is, if you look at government spending, if you look at... Let's wait and see the summer statement and the forthcoming budget. But COVID aside, that this is a government that has hugely enlarged the state. We have a health service that's now running it.
You see, you can't say COVID aside because COVID was a huge driving force
a lot of this spending was temporary, once off Moria, and it's now being institutionalised and permanent, particularly in relation to health. You'll never get a dividend back to the Exchequer from the health budget post-COVID. But nothing much has changed.
When you see this, you know, how badly and hugely people are struggling, like,
I'll give you a political response, and particularly for people who are struggling. What governments who borrow money that has to be paid back whatever higher rates of interest do to people who are struggling is they undermine the capacity of the state to fund sustainably the public services those people most need when they are in need. That's what that sort of spending does. It's unsustainable and it always hurts the weakest most.
You know, Leo Varadkar's there calls for tax cuts. How does that fit? I mean, that's surely a kind of a right wing or at least centre right position.
The political antithesis root of that is the suddiest moment of the bubble that was the Celtic Tiger, when we were mad for tax cuts and more spending altogether all the time. And we swore we were never going to do that. And Fine Gael came into government post 2011 on the basis it would never happen again. And Micheál Martin used to go to Ard Eshine 2012, 2013, and he said it would never happen again. Yeah. And now they're writing the recipe book for it again.
What do you make of how, you know, politics have shifted along the ideological line in recent years?
Well, you see, I would have always seen myself as sort of the centre side of Fine Gael, and obviously I would have fought against the right movement within the party. And Fine Gael always, to my mind, had that, you know, Costello Fitzgerald blend going on, and they lived together and we all got on fine. But I think Ireland has changed. I think we continuously go back to 100 years ago and how the state was formed. And I think Ireland as a country has a fairly unique position globally. And I think that Fine Gael has struggled in recent years, probably since Enda Kenny seemed to be able to bring all sides with him, where Leo Varadkar seems to have moved and disagree slightly, which are to occupy that slightly right of centre place, which may not be ideal right now for the way the country is not post-COVID, but living with the price of COVID. But the reality is that, you know, despite the failings of the Celtic Tiger, people are on the ground really struggling at the minute.
But Leo Varadkar has been calling for welfare cuts or welfare increases, tax cuts, all sorts of add-on.
And by the way, and he undermined the interests of the state in telling public servants on an interview here on the premises of this station that the 5% in addition to the 2% that they were being offered would be met with more imminently. That came as news to some of his colleagues in government, I suspect.
Well, I'm not privy, obviously, to those dealings and those agreements within government.
But do you think he's doing well in that? He's carving that. I mean, is it a fake a battle that's being set up between Fine Gael on the one hand and Sinn Féin on the other? And it does exclude Fianna Fáil. And is it any wonder that Fianna Fáil is slipping further behind because it's like Fine Gael will be the only people that won't let that shower in, and it suits Sinn Féin as well.
Yeah, and Fine Gael are clearly trying to do that. But the reality is that Sinn Féin have positioned themselves anything but that shower that have been in for the last decade. And it doesn't really matter. They're never really examined on their narrative. They're thrown cookies out.
Sinn Féin
as well.
Are saying that. Yeah,
Sinn Féin are saying that. Yeah. And they don't have to be much. They just have to be not the crowd that are in at the minute. And no matter what they offer, it seems attractive because people are suffering so much and some people are coming out of a decade of suffering. To be topped off by a pandemic and a war, and the vista isn't overly positive either with inflation, and it looks like it's going to be a sustained inflation. So people really are, to my mind, looking towards any sort of positive future, and perhaps that's going to be the major struggle of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to get the electorate to trust them to bring the country through the next decade.
Well, particularly
after the last
particularly if the housing crisis doesn't, you know.
I mean, I think it's reasonable. I mean, I know sometimes people talk about politics and how, you know, as if Sinn Féin are promising cookies or promising whatever and politicians promise whatever. I think it's also reasonable for someone to support a party, you know, if they are exactly as been said, kind of in lower socioeconomic grades, if they are struggling, if they are suffering, it doesn't really matter what the other parties are. I mean, if you know that the current system isn't working for you, it's understandable to just roll the dice and go for someone else. I think all the policies and promises.
And has there ever been a politician who didn't promise the earth, moon and stars, you know, when times were tough? I mean, really.
But the struggle is now that it hasn't been delivered.
Well, the fact that we're struggling to think of the answer, Casey, I think. Well,
exactly.
might be the answer.
I think it's a mistake for them to promise these things. I don't actually think that that's what's, you know, I don't think it's helping Sinn Féin to promise things, whatever they are promising. I don't even know. I can't even, you know, name it myself. But I don't think that's why they're popular. It's because of the opposition to the other party. So I actually think it's a mistake sometimes when parties go in and start promising lots of stuff in an election. Because they actually end up losing. I mean, actually, one of the most interesting ones was Fine Gael in 2016. They got wound up in the whole fiscal space. They decided that they are going to spend more than Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. And there was this whole thing about Piers Doherty and Michael Noonan in that election. And Fine Gael actually declined in the polls during that campaign because they looked fiscally irresponsible. Mm. I don't think fiscal irresponsibility actually plays well with voters. You know, when you do focus groups with voters that are even very, very low incomes, they still kind of want to know where's the money coming for these promises. They're still very clear. They don't buy every promise. They're cynical as everyone, you know.
But there's a degree of dissonance for Fine Gael that you don't get for the other political parties because it does project itself as the party of fiscal rectitude. And that doesn't map on to the promises that are being made. And it doesn't map on to either what they've done in government, more so I would say from 2016 rather than before. I mean, when we look at how the distributions have been, actually about 9/10 of all of the money has been put on expenditure rises rather than on tax cuts. So if we kind of were positioning them on a spectrum, we would say they're certainly much more centrist or centre-left than they are actually asserting in their debate. So there's that dissonance in their reputation, which could be part of why Fine Gael is having such a struggle trying to connect even to its own core base, because it hasn't particularly delivered a pro-business agenda over that period.
Well, our listeners are saying Pascal Donohue and other Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil ministers are not centrists. They're neoliberals or Thatcherites who primarily serve the interests of big business.
But I'm not entirely sure that's fully borne out in the budgetary arithmetic, although they do get extensively criticised for being on the right of the spectrum. But if we look at straightforward taxes and public spending, they're much more close to the centre and to the other political parties. Gerard's completely correct on that.
Yeah, I mean, no neoliberal Thatcherite club would let any of those people in.
Okay, I'm looking at the clock. I want to just get in a question about the United Ireland question, the national question, as it used to be called. How might it impact political choices that are made here?
Well, I think we'd say from the election study, looking at it, United Ireland, or kind of the national question, there's broad majority soft support for United Ireland. When you begin to dig into it, though, and put parameters around what that might look like, there's much more variation in terms of opinion. The other thing to say is many of the new Sinn Féin supporters are not that concerned with the national question. They're broadly in favour of United Ireland, but it is not a top-end priority for them the way it is with the kind of representatives who are elected for Sinn Féin. So there is quite a difference between their party elites and the supporters that they have on the ground. So that will be interesting to see how that plays out.
And once people start to seriously consider the implications of where this might take us, you know, you know, what will we be? What will we be? What will we be living in post unification of this country? What will the political structures be?
Yeah.
Will it frighten people away from this?
Well, I mean, it's hard to know what would happen down south. Certainly in the north, they've done a good bit of work on trying to understand demographic projections and all that sort of stuff to see how likely is this, because there seems to be quite a strong narrative that this is some demographic or at least inevitability as a result of Brexit. But demographically, sure, if you look at the percentage of people who come from a Catholic background originally, yeah, that's likely to be a majority of the next census. But when you ask people where they define themselves today, not where they are originally from, the biggest, fastest moving group, far quicker than any Catholic versus Protestant thing, is that middle ground. So it's moving, it's not a demographic inevitability, but it's becoming more of an open question in Northern Ireland that they can publicly debate now. Obviously, that middle ground is generally quite liberal. It's kind of alliance voting, favour climate change and all this sort of stuff. But when it comes to the issue of United Ireland, they're not in favour, broadly speaking. And that's quite obvious when you look at the data, that this isn't inevitable. It's actually an open question now in Northern Ireland of what direction it wants to go. And then the other thing about Brexit, there's an assertion that because of Brexit and the protocol, it suggests that United Ireland's more likely. But just as the protocol, which people constantly argue in Ireland, the protocol is very beneficial for Northern Ireland, that's also the case for ensuring that they stay in this current status quo rather than joining United Ireland. Because if they get rid of the protocol and join the South, they actually lose those financial incentives as well to stay where they are. And obviously, over time, you'll find, you know, the natural progression of countries across the world and across the WTO rules is that the kind of existing barriers to trade are going to, over time, decline. So I don't believe at all this kind of idea that it's inevitable by any stretch. I don't think it isn't backed up by any of the data whatsoever.
No, the short term sort of fizz around United Ireland and a referendum in the near future is completely unfounded. There is no majority in the near future to support the Sinn Féin proposal of a referendum. And furthermore, such a referendum anytime soon will be very divisive and destabilising. On the other hand, you know, the 21st century is not going to be a rerun of the 20th century. Demographics are an issue. Another issue is what for Scotland? I don't know the answer.
That was my next question. If they are going to rerun their referendum, as they tell us they are, mm-hmm. or de facto the next election will be a referendum on independence.
And how can Labour in Britain get into government without the Scottish Nationalists? And would the Scottish Nationalists ever support Labour in government without a commitment to a referendum? They're all what ifs. But what's not a what if is that if Scotland leaves the Union, the union with Northern Ireland is effectively finished. And how that plays out, how long it takes, how unstable it becomes, I've no idea. But a sundering of the union within the island of Britain will have immense consequences on this island.
I mean, just to quickly say, I think the SNP's greater problem is if they don't go in with Labour, because it suggests they align with the Tories, which is actually even worse for them. So I'm pretty sure they'd go in with Labour. Labour don't need to promise them anything, I don't think, to be honest with you, in the UK.
There's a couple of more texts. Micheál Martin sold whatever was left of the Fianna Fáil soul for purely selfish reasons, says Graham Onan in Sligo. Confidence in supply was a disaster for the party. However, the blatant U-turn by Martin to put Fine Gael back in government once again will never be forgiven. Fianna Fáil has slid gradually further and further to the right, says Graham, under Martin, and he must be removed. And a tweet from Adam Long. Recent groundbreaking referendums show clearly that the centre of political gravity in Ireland is now decidedly socially liberal. That's profound for party political strategising too.
Yep.
And there we'll take a break.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.